And now, not really sure where to go with that, or if he should go anywhere at all, Soren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you for joining us here on a busy Thursday as we make our way through the week. It's another hot one. It's a hot one. It's not that
maybe
bad.
It's gonna steamy one.
It's gonna be hotter, but I always, you know, I think about the folks that work outside, and so make sure you get lots of fluids because it jumped on us here pretty quick this year. We'll be certainly thinking of you. We got a lot coming your way today. Peter Vermees is going to be with us shortly.
Yep.
Manager, sporting director for Sporting Kansas City will be with us in our next segment.
Always insightful and entertaining is one of my all-time favorite manager, coach type guests we've ever had in the show.
Coming off a win.
Yeah.
We had it scheduled, so had they at 2-0, I'm like, this is going to be a pisser.
At 2-2, hey, this could be something. At
yeah.
4-2, this should be really good.
Started looking better. So anyway, yes, we will talk to Peter Vermees coming up here in a little bit. Stump the Chumps coming up in the 3 o'clock hour. Pete Enick, Todd Lebo joining us. I like my questions.
Do you?
Mm-hmm. I think they're topical.
Cool.
And I think they're interesting. Like, that's what I want is interesting. Like, well, you can come up with something that's hard.
Yeah.
You can come up with something that's easy, but I want it to be of interest. I like the answer, and I'm just going to tell you, there are 12 answers. I don't think you'll get 12.
Okay.
There are 9 answers. You might get all 9, and it's not even about getting the answers. It's about what goes with it.
Cool.
That I find interesting.
I'm intrigued.
Okay, good. I'm glad you are. We'll do that coming up at 3 o'clock. We will get to Blair Kirchhoff in the 4 o'clock hour. Blair Kirchhoff! It's funny to me.
Blair.
We'll talk a little college football, some transfer portal, some NIL, maybe even a little Chiefs football with Blair Kirchhoff. The great one. From the Kansas City Star will be with us in the 4 o'clock hour. At 5 o'clock, Jeff Passan.
Yep. Jeff. Smarty Pants himself.
Jeff Passan. We're awaiting the schedule. We've got special programming tonight. Josh Briscoe, who you hear, does a fantastic job handling Chiefs post during the course of the regular season, is going to wow you, is going to rock your world.
For the most part.
When it comes to the Chiefs schedule, He'll find out what the last two games are. Like, by the time we get there, I think we may know all 16, right?
Yeah, let me refresh the page. I know there's at least 7 that I've seen out there. Let's see if there's any more added to that list. Nope, still stuck at 7.
Still stuck at 7? What do we got? What do we know to this point, Curtis, for those that might be jumping into their car, saying, that's it, I can't do this job anymore, I'm freaking out of here. What 7 do we know? Let's run them down.
Week 1 at Houston. I'm now seeing that as going to be, Thursday was for week 2. I saw a little mention, I thought, that's not Thursday, no. So that's a Sunday. Week 2, home against the Chargers on Thursday Night Football.
Okay.
Week 4, at Tampa Bay, Sunday Night Football. Brady v. Mahomes.
Okay. Not in Germany.
No.
Will not be in Germany.
It will be in Tampa. It won't be in Tampa Bay because that would be a bad idea.
There will be no schnitzel?
Nope. No Wiener schnitzel.
But it will be in Tampa.
Yes.
Okay.
Week 5, home for Las Vegas, Monday Night Football.
Okay.
Week 6, Sunday, home for Buffalo. No primetime. First time they haven't played in primetime in the regular season in a few years. Week 9, Sunday Night Football, home against the Titans. And week 14, also Sunday Night Football, at Denver.
So of the 7, how many of them are home games?
Of the 7... 4 home games. I'm only seeing 6 now. Hang on. 1, 2, 3. No, yeah, the 7-4 home games.
Okay.
And 5 are primetime.
Hmm. Okay.
3 at home, 2 on the road.
One more time for those that were trying to follow along at home.
Week 1 at Houston. Week 2, home for the Chargers, Thursday Night Football. Week 4 at Tampa, Sunday Night Football. Week 5, home for the Raiders, Monday Night Football. Week 6, home for Buffalo. Week 9, home for Tennessee, Sunday Night Football.
Okay.
Week 14, at Denver, Sunday Night Football.
Let me ask you a question. Is this the plan? to leak it out to get people talking? Like, does this make you more likely to sit and watch that whole show? Like, I'm much more likely to do work and put on Briscoe talking Chiefs as things happen and watch playoff basketball or hockey or Royals baseball than I am to actually sit and watch this show. Like, I don't need to hear, like, oh, the Browns. When the Browns and Bengals get together, like, no, pass.
Yeah, I don't.
Does this make it better? Or are they just this bad at keeping a secret?
I think there's some intentionality.
Intentional leakage?
Whatever. Because it does keep, through the course of a day, you may forget, you know, if you're somewhat of a casual fan or even a fan, you go, oh, damn, it's tonight, I forgot. And every once in a while when you hear, oh, this game's been leaked, a couple hours later, oh, this game's been leaked, it keeps it top of your mind. Tonight's the schedule. But they don't give the whole thing. Now, some teams, we've seen the Dolphins' entire schedule is up like 3 hours ago and or 3 or 4 hours ago. But I think putting a little bit out there to keep it on people's minds and always, oh, hey, breaking news from the NFL.
Right.
Breaking news for Team X. But still having something in reserve for the show tonight is probably intentional.
Sometime over the course of the next 4 hours, while we're on the air, I believe all 17 Chiefs games will be out there.
I do not doubt that.
I mean, that's my recollection, is as we get into the afternoon, mm-hmm. at some point somebody's going to get a picture of the actual schedule. They're going to take a photo of it, and they're going to Instagram it or tweet it out. And we'll have, you know, the whole Cowboys schedule's out, which will give, obviously, 13 of their opponents, you know, one or two games.
Yeah.
That they're going to play. And you see enough of them that we get down to where we're literally just waiting on two or three teams before it's all said and done.
And I could absolutely see a situation where the NFL says it is more valuable for us as a business for everyone to be talking about this from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. than it is for people to watch this show tonight.
Yeah.
what do you want, guys? Do you want people to kind of speculate and wonder and then everyone tune in for this massive show? Which people might not anyway, because the internet, oh, there's my team. Or do you want it to be a recurring topic every 15 minutes for 12 straight hours? I'll take B.
Yeah, we've known who the opponents are going to be for quite some time because it's a mathematical formula. So we knew as soon as the season ended, last year, okay, this is what it's going to be. It's going to be these opponents. Just what order is it going to be in?
Mm-hmm.
Right? What has been your vibe on what the Chiefs' record's going to be? Nobody ever wants to put it down, but as soon as we get an order, mm-hmm. we'll all be talking about. Friday's show will be tomorrow's show, which is because today's Thursday. You know, that makes tomorrow Friday. We'll all be about this is what I got them going. Here's the three road games in a row right here. No bye game till week 12, or this sucks. Bye game week 5, going to be a long stretch. We'll be grinding through it, and we'll all have what it is. But what do you feel like is coming?
They have an extra road game this year. And so I think you kind of have to factor that into what you think the record's going to be. Looking at how things are popping off, at Houston, Chargers for home is pretty decent. You do have a short week, but you're coming off a road game against a team you should beat, so you have a very good chance of being 2-0. I don't know where they're going week 3. If it's at Indy and then at Tampa, that's a tough little stretch, but you should be 2-0 at that point. And you would have three of your nine road games out of the way. So, and then a lot of home games the rest of the way when the team seemingly would be more of a cohesive unit. Right now I'm thinking 12-5. 11-6.
Yeah, I like your thinking on, okay, they can handle this. I do like getting those road games out of the way. I'm feeling 11-6 plus,
mm-hmm.
right? So 11-6 has been my vibe all along on where it is, and I think they're due. The division is going to be really tough, but they're not going to go 0-6. But, 3-3 could happen.
Sure.
And 3-3 could happen, and they could still be 12-5. But I think if you look at it and go, look, 3-3, 4-2, best case. The schedule, I think, looks pretty salty. So if you're going to lose you know, 2 or 3 and you're playing the extra game on the road, you know, I kind of get to 11-6.
Yeah, the 3 road games against what would be at least close to level competition of the division, plus Tampa, Indy, San Francisco, Arizona, Cincinnati. The road schedule, there just aren't, other than Houston, there's no flat tires there.
Yeah, and so what do you think they do in those 9 games? Are you 4-5? Because I can see that. 4-5 and 8-1 at home. Yeah. Or 7-1 at home. Yeah. Brings them home 11-6.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of what I'm feeling.
I think they're going to go 12-5. They need to go 5-4 in those.
Yeah.
They have to have a winning record in those games.
I've pointed out, and I should update it because it's been a couple of months, you know, and they've had a draft since then. But when we pointed out the fact that the Broncos by far have the easiest schedule in the division, which they should, they finished last. Mm-hmm. But based on the Super Bowl odds, they were definitively getting the easiest kiss. But amongst the other two, they were pretty comparable.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it has people saying, well, the Broncos and Raiders are fighting for third. It's the Chiefs and the Chargers. I think it's the Broncos, Chargers, and Chiefs that are fighting for it, and the Raiders figure to be in fourth. But they've gotten better, too. And that's why I do think the order of the schedule is important. Do you get off on a good foot? The Chiefs didn't, but they found themselves, got on a roll. I actually think that, you know, the Chiefs, it could have been even worse for the Chiefs had the one of those teams actually taking care of business in the middle of the season, right? They let the Chiefs were way back and buried, and then they immediately handed it to them over about 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it should have been. I remember talking to Kevin Harlan like, hey, let's remember, you dig that kind of hole, you know, it might take them all the way into November to get back caught up. And they were caught up like 3 weeks later.
Yes.
And I think that is that to me is the part is like, what is the psyche going to be? The Chiefs have proven they're tough because they dug a hole and they didn't fold. So they've proven they're tough. I like that there's going to be some young, hungry players. They might make some mistakes, but I think they're going to fly around and pop some people.
Yep.
I like that Andy Reid is building a different kind of wide receiving core because I don't think anybody can really know exactly how he's going to play, but I think they're going to play a more physical style of football. They definitely are on the defensive side, but I think they will on the offensive side as well. They're going to be bigger along the offensive line. They're going to be bigger at the wide receiver position. I think they're going to pound the rock a little bit more. And listen, if you know they have 9 carries in the first game, then we'll be like, well, okay, there goes that. But I actually do think they're going to pound away with the rock. And I think it's going to be, 1, to keep Patrick Mahomes healthy. I think, 2, it's going to be to let the offensive line eat a little bit and knock some people around. And so I think they're going to do that. And I think they're going to do it to try to shorten the game. I mean, I don't think you have to. If you feel like you're going to play defense better, then you can let that clock spill out a little bit more. Like, you know, 27-20 is still a win.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be 44-40. And so I think you will see, just to me, adding Ronald Jones, you know, I think Derek Gore is a good runner. I think they're going to pound away with their running backs. I think they're going to unleash the offensive line. They're going to get away from some of the RPOs. Because, like, right now everyone's talking about it. In fact, I don't remember who I was. It was one of the PFF guys was talking about the RPOs and how that's where the league's going. And I think the league is arriving there as the train is leaving. You know, the teams that jump on that are getting in at the wrong time.
Right. That's a good analogy.
And I think it's time to say, okay, everybody's gone to the nickel and the dime. We're going to load up and knock some people down.
And I also think the idea, it's out of necessity, but of recreating Tyreek Hill, and I've used this term a lot because I think it works in the aggregate, is going to make them maybe on, and they don't have one guy who's quite as explosive on a given play as Tyreek Hill, but I think from a schematic standpoint, it's a lot harder to figure out who to take away other than Travis Kelce. I mean, maybe Travis Kelce's numbers dip a little bit, but if the guys who are around him pick it up, and there are more, you're much more likely to get impact, I think, from your third and fourth wide receiver this year than you were a year ago. I think the Chiefs' passing offense, even if it's trimmed down for the reasons you mentioned, could be much more difficult to contain, could be more explosive. So maybe it's not 50 and 10, but if Patrick Mahomes won't stop me if he's 38 and 7.
I think he's going to be well into the 40s.
Yeah, or 45 and 8. I mean, yeah. I think that could return maybe not as many bombs, but he's going to be a much harder quarterback to stop in the red zone.
Yeah.
And their percentage, and with Ronald Jones, this is going to be, a much better team inside the 20s, which was, we saw a year ago, just undid them in some games. I think those numbers are going to go back up, and even though they may not throw it as much, they're going to be much more efficient when they do in the red zone.
Juju needs to be healthy.
Yes.
If he is, he's a guy that breaks tackles. Mm-hmm. Sky Moore breaks tackles. Throw in if they're more physical and let the offensive line really fire out instead of, you know, taking a step and then holding up, waiting because it's a RPO. I think they're going to beat up an offense. And I think they may have some games that they hadn't, you know, where you're looking like, okay, 5 minutes to go in the third quarter. You know, it's 2017 Chiefs, and all of a sudden it's touchdown, field goal, touchdown, and now it's 34-20. They're, you know, now they go into the panic mode. You're getting a turnover, and it's grind down, kick a field goal or a touchdown, and all of a sudden, wow, holy cow, second half, they won 21-0 over the last 20 minutes. 41-27, the Chiefs won this easy. Like, that's, I think that's the kind of team that they can be.
And I think the from a national narrative, it's in, you know, so much of covering anything, particularly when you're in the 30,000-foot view, is conventional wisdom or what you're hearing. Oh, that's what everyone thinks. It's the Chiefs in successive years have gone Super Bowl champion, Super Bowl runner-up, conference championship runner-up, and they lost Tyreek Hill. They're on the slide. I think there's going to be – I think there's an excellent chance. Maybe this is, 45 years of Chiefs fandom, but I don't think it is because I think the parts are there for one of those years when they look back and go, why didn't we see this coming?
Right.
The national people. And I could absolutely see that situation. I think they're a better team than they were a year ago, and they're a collapsed half away from being a favorite in the Super Bowl, and I think they're better this year.
Just wait it out. More games are going to drip out. We will give you the whole breakdown coming up tonight. Josh Prisco will do a great job breaking it all down tonight. The Chiefs draft is coming up. We'll have it for you. Each one of the little nuggets that come out, we'll give it to you here throughout the course of the day, and Josh Prisco will break it all down and give you what it all means coming up tonight. We're going to take a break. We come back. Peter Vermees scheduled to join us as they get ready to take on the Portland Timbers, coming off a win, a big win, as a matter of fact, in the U.S. Open Cup. We'll talk to Peter Vermees coming up shortly. Peter Yates, Enoch, Todd Lebo coming up. A little Stump the Chumps. Blair Kirkhoff in the 4, passing in the 5. Got a jam-packed program coming your way. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back. You're on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We talk some soccer here as we talk sporting Kansas City. It's always brought to you by our friends at Corona. Corona Light, Corona Premier, and the Corona Hard Seltzer. Zero carbs, zero sugars. If you're getting that beach bod in shape, I'll go with those Corona Hard Seltzers sold wherever you get your Coronas. We welcome the manager and sporting director for Sporting Kansas City to the program. Peter Vermees is with us. Peter, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Doing great. And tell me, I'm curious. Is the 4-2 win you got in the Open Cup against Dallas the perfect win for a manager? One, you get the win, but lots to point to and work on when you come back to training.
Easiest way to say it is always easier to use a win to help you when things aren't going so well than it is to say, hey, we played a good game and we lost, and we played a good game and we tied. So for sure, it provides a lot of different things, but it also provides me with something as well. It provides me with at least another piece of evidence that is not subjective in that, you know, again, we played the game against New York and I thought the guys, their effort, their concentration, especially to the execution of the plan, because we changed our formation a little bit and where everybody was playing, and so you leave there getting a point, which obviously that's a part of our game, right? A part of our sport. And so meaning, you know, to get a tie on the road is a good result. And so you want, and you think, and you try to lead the guys to thinking that that's a, you know, that is a step in the right direction. But what this last game proves even more is that the effort and the commitment and the belief is still within the guys. And that's incredibly important, because you can get discouraged, you can lose hope, you can lose that commitment, you can lose all those things. But this is just another example, another piece of evidence that, you know, the guys are believing, they're committed, and they're fighting for it.
Your demeanor post game, you know, you weren't contentious or anything, but you know, and listen, I know a lot of times part of a long season is keeping an even keel, not getting too high about the good things or getting too down about the bad things. But you know, it seemed like you could have been a little bit more on the upbeat side. Was there something that was were the missed opportunities, and we can get to some of the particulars here in a minute, but some of the misplays and some of the opportunities that maybe Dallas didn't capitalize on weighing on you heavier than, you know, what you just said, the affirmation of things, you know, a subjective affirmation of things going in the right direction?
No. Look, I think you have to enjoy what you do, right? I think we could both agree that I'm pretty passionate about what I do. I'm you know, at times incredibly enthusiastic and also animated about what I do. At the same time, you know, I don't, if you look at most of the games that I've coached over the years, even finals, I'm not one to over celebrate. You know, there are guys that win a game and they, you know, they act like they won the World Cup. And I have too much respect for the game, and I have too much respect for what the opponent does in regards to preparation. And I know that the, you know, sports and this game can be cruel at times. And so I'm not big into that piece of it. I know the ebbs and the flows of a game. I also know that myself, I made a mistake, I believe, you know, in the game. I think the formation that we played, I just don't think the guys that we had on the field were ready for that formation. And so it's one of the reasons why in the first half, I completely changed the team around to our old formation of a 4-3-3. And it changed our complexion in the weaning minutes of that first half, like the last 10, 15 minutes of that first half, which really led into the second half and that, you know, onslaught. I thought our conviction to go forward and, you know, create chances in the box and get numbers in the box and just the near misses, but that commitment to stay with it to the last, you know, minute of the game, get the equalizer, you know, proves that commitment. But at the same time, you know, I'm always very self-reflective I'm a self-evaluator, and I like to think about those things. But I would say that, look, I was happy with the result. I was more happy with the commitment of the player. That is what was most important to me. But the celebration aspect, yeah, doesn't really happen that much because I got another game coming up so quick and got to get ready for it.
What was the mindset on changing the formation? What were you thinking it would do that it didn't?
I thought based on the personnel, it would be a better, it would give everybody a little bit more cover defensively. And it would also give us a chance to compact the middle. What we didn't do well is we didn't have a good, and we call them triggers. We didn't have good triggers to get out and defend them to go and press the ball or go and step up on them when the ball goes backwards. We just weren't getting it. And so getting back to a 4-3-3 gave us the chance to do two things. One was have those triggers to get out and step up the field when the ball either went backwards and put them under pressure. So it didn't give them a lot of time on the ball. And then the other was, I just think that because our guys have been playing it for so long and they train in it on a regular basis, that fundamentally from a possession perspective, we just circulate the ball much better in that allocation on the field positionally.
You make the decision to go for the substitutions. Was that a pre-planned based upon how many minutes?
It was not a reaction. No, it was pre-planned. My idea was to go to a 4-3-3 around the 60th minute by bringing on three players right away, which were Tyree Shelton, Daniel Shalloway, and Remy Walter, and taking out the center forward, one of the wingers, and then the player who was playing the left side, Spencer Glass. It was pre-planned in my mind to do it because I wanted to get to a 4-3-3 and play to the strengths of the new guys we were bringing on. And then Johnny was going to be brought on based on where I saw the next, either need, meaning either wing or underneath the other center forward, which is what I did. I brought him in to play underneath the center forward, and I actually changed our formation a tad at that point because we were playing a 4-3-3, but the triangle in the middle was inverted because usually we play with one holding midfielder and then two attacking. Well, I kind of basically just turned it around and said, we're going to have two holding, and then Johnny's going to be more like an underneath forward or a number 10.
And it obviously worked, right? You get back, you get the tying goal, and momentum's on your side, and you take the win. And before I get to the positives of that, you also had some misplays that really could have cost you that didn't. One misplay, obviously, Pulskamp, plays a ball over under duress and ends up giving up an easy goal. Is that just a matter of getting up to speed with the speed of the game of this level and getting the minutes? Or is that the part that why, people look at it and say, hey, you just gave this guy an extension. Why aren't you, moving Tim Melia? For if you believe in him, then move Tim Melia for some other piece that you need in a trade and give him the reins. Is this what he still has to work on to be ready to take over that number one goalkeeping spot?
So those are just little nuances of the game that when some things are learned through repetition of situation, but obviously the best is when you understand why you should do it or not do it, because then you can make good decisions. And so just in that situation, you talk about the ball that he played, it wasn't so much of it is and it isn't, right? That there's no doubt that the player who received the ball should not have fumbled the football, if you will, right? Because he did. But the other thing was is that it wasn't that the player was so much under duress when he played it. It's just the proximity of the opponent and the length of where he played the ball from to the other player. So there's a couple different mistakes. First off, if you're going to play a ball across your goal, you better be right in the middle or close to it so that if you lose the ball, you can defend the goal. There's no way that he was going to recover if a mistake happened, and a mistake did happen. The other is that when you're playing a ball over distance, then you have to make sure that the opponent doesn't have the advantage in the ball over distance in the short space that he has to then pressure the opponent, right? So, and he, he failed on all of them. And so now when the guy makes the mistake of not receiving the ball correctly, it winds up being a big chance. But make no mistake about it, right? As much as that's a chance, there's other chances on the other side that, in the second half, we could have scored, with the chances that we were creating, we scored another four or five goals just because the onslaught that we were putting on them.
And so, you had another one that really it looked like was wide open and the guy just missed it wide for Dallas. Is that how – I mean – and you are right. There are moments where your team did everything right and very easily could have been rewarded with a goal. Do you just chalk it up that way with the team, or do you cheer up the offensive guy and say, just keep doing that, they're going to find the back of the net, and then come down and say, all right, this is where we have to tighten up back here on this end?
So, that's a great question, right? I always think it's a combination of both. I think that you always have to be complimentary to the things that you do well. It's so easy to get negative and be like, oh, we weren't good at this. We weren't good at that. And, hey, by the way, there's obviously something you were good at because you came and you scored four unanswered goals between the second half and the overtime, right? and you put them under extreme pressure. Because in the second half, with even without the changes, I mean, we were going at them and they couldn't even get out of their half of the field for a while there. And so there's a lot of good things. So yes, you're for sure going to accentuate the good. But again, you have to talk about the places where there are learning lessons. And so with John Poulsen, the goalkeeper, absolutely that discussion has to happen, right? It happens. You have to have that discussion. You can't, I don't believe that you sweep things under the rug just because now all of a sudden, hey, you got a good result and now you've got to focus on the good. I don't think you do that. I think you learn again from those mistakes. And the idea is to learn why, not just, hey, let's just do this 20 times the right way. And then hopefully you'll have muscle memory and you'll remember it that way. I don't believe that's the way it goes.
You said before the season started with the injuries, but with new faces, you know, give us 10 games. It's, you know, we're at about 11 games. You said that's when you can start to evaluate. You haven't lost 4 straight matches, won the last one, put 4 goals on the board. What's your evaluation for where it sits now at that mark that you kind of looked at before the season?
Certain guys that obviously have been around for a while are coming into form. That's important. They're also fit. So I would say that they're more close to their 90 minutes fit at a very high intensity, which I think is also helping their form. So that's a positive. Some of the new guys are getting closer. They're still far away from a lot of our concepts. And the reason being is that like right now I'm getting ready for, and I say I'm getting, we're preparing the group for the game against Portland. It's very difficult to work on the individual concepts of the guys who are new and spend all that time on them because we got to go win games. So you're doing accelerated adaptation for those guys. And it's not the way that you would do it in preseason, because preseason is this 5-6 week concentrated amount of time where you are just doing like defensive principles for a week, offensive principles for a week. And then you're building on your style of play from that. And you've given those guys kind of the foundation, and you can really, you're not worried about results at that point. You're trying to get them ready for that first game to be able to play a certain way. And we've missed all of that with those guys. So my answer to that is they're getting closer, but they're still far away. But other guys are really starting to step, like Cameron Duke is playing very well. The fact that he's had to fill in for the outside back position on the right, he's actually played very well. And he's played that in our academy as he's come through our system, because he's played really 2 places. He played in the central midfielder and he's played right back. And he's done a really, really good job there. So that's a real positive. The 2 central defenders that are playing right now in Courtney Ford and Robbie Volader, both of them have created a really good partnership and a confidence level between each other, which is excellent. Felipe Hernandez had his best game since he went out last year to his suspension. So those are all positives moving in the right direction. I still think that we have to get more in the attack. But we also have to find another player if possible to help us, because of the Gattikinda situation. Because, you know, if he would have came back, he would have given that number 10, that internal playmaking midfielder that we need. We don't really have that within the group at the moment. We've had to do that a little bit by committee. That's kind of what I did in the game the other night. We put Johnny in the middle. So we're moving closer. But we have to make some acquisitions in the summertime to bolster us as we're moving through the rest of the season. That's why it's important for us to keep in the hunt and stay close to the pack as we move through the summer months.
So I don't think you'd be sharing that unless you were quite optimistic that you were going to be able to get that done.
You mean as far as getting some players?
Yes.
Well, I say we have to, you know, the number of things that have to go right is, first off, you have to find a player. Second is, the player has to want to come here. And the third is, you have to be able to fit them in financially. What I will say to you is that the replacement cost that we get for a player when he's a season-ending injury, I'll tell you the number, $250,000. That's not a huge impact into a roster when you're missing your DPs who are outside of the cap. So the good thing is that we have always been very responsible with our spending on the cap from a, you know, lack of a better term, a rainy day situation. And so we have some reserves that, you know, we can put together, and now it's just finding the right player. And I said, his desire to come, and then the financial situation. And believe me, we are working overtime in that area.
Okay. You know, if I said percentage chance,
well, I'm going to be the optimist and say, hey, we're getting at least one or two guys in the summertime. So I'm going to be the optimist and say that's going to happen. I hope it does, because that's what we're working for.
Right, right. Okay. We're talking to Peter Vermees here in the program. You mentioned the draws, having three of those in a row, you know, and turning things in the right direction, getting this win, even, you know, and getting it done with guys that are the depth and getting the whole team involved to getting it. Where is the mindset now for the team as you get back into MLS play?
Obviously, well, today the guys are day off. They needed it. It was a, you know, we came in on Wednesday after the game on Tuesday, did like a regeneration deal and gave them off today. So tomorrow we'll do our preparation. But I would like to think that they feel good. They should. I would also like to think that they should feel good about our identity. Because if, you know, if it was ever proven, it was proven the other night. The second we went back to a 4-3-3 and who we are, it's when all of a sudden we started to control the game. And I think that's a real, real positive. And it's a talking point. And so they know that. I've spoken to them about it. And like I said, it's important for us to continue to believe, which the players have also exhibited as well. And those are all the good things. Now you got to continue to go out and execute. And that's the thing that we'll keep our focus on.
I know it's a long season, but you know, the three teams that are in front of you are your next three opponents. Does that make this a more important stretch?
Sure helps, right? It sure helps, mm-hmm. right? To knock them out of getting points, no doubt. But I think right now is, as much as those are, you know, that's a reality, I that's not our focus. Our focus is that we have to continue to gain points each game. And whether that's one or three, we got to keep trying to do that game after game after game. And then obviously we got to gain three as much as we possibly can, but we got to keep getting results with each game now going forward.
Yeah. We're talking to Peter Vermees here in the program. Portland is up next. What challenges do they face? What's the biggest thing for getting a win against Portland?
They're always such a really, really hard-nosed defensive team. They know how to shut it down, and they've always been very, very good on the counter. And that's something that, you know, when you're a team like us who again likes to possess the ball, you have to take care of the ball. You have to be good with it, and not lose it in dangerous spots against a team like that, because that's how they hurt you. So patience and again, being really aware of your opponent and not giving up the ball in bad areas.
And Portland's still one of your favorite spots to go play. I mean, it's been one that had an affinity for in the past.
It's a really good environment. They have great fans. It's a great environment for the players to play in. I would say I'm not, you know, always the biggest fan of turf, but it's just a tremendous environment. It really is.
Let's get to our final four. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have an urgent orthopedic sports injury, you can go to the University of Kansas Health System. They will see you quickly. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Of course, the official healthcare provider of Kansas Athletics, together with LMH Health. Peter, I will start you with this. Are you more a tequila guy or a milk and cookies guy?
Oh, I would definitely say milk and cookies over tequila, man. Yeah, no chance.
There was a long time ago, the Royals had a manager, Tony Muser, who, when the Royals were losing in a post-game press conference, he said, listen, we need more tequila guys, less milk and cookie guys. And I've always, that phrase, you know, it got a big backlash out of people. I've always loved just putting that phrase to people in context. Nobody ever says tequila. They always say milk and cookies.
It's interesting, but if you put it in the context the way he used it, mm-hmm. I would say tequila.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right?
Yeah. I mean, I actually think that's a great example.
Yeah. Are you a Marvel fan? The Marvel movies?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I am.
Okay. Have you seen the latest, Doctor Strange?
Yeah, I went with my son. Yeah, my son enjoys those, so it's something that it's great for us to kind of get out and do it. So, yeah, I saw it.
And
it was Doctor Strange.
Yeah, was it good?
It was. It was it's in line. It's in line with what kind of all the other movies have, you know, kind of their backstory. So, yeah, it's good.
Okay. It was announced that the U.S. has gotten the 31 and 33 Rugby World Cups. We know we're hoping, and Kansas City is expected to get maybe as many as 5 matches here. Are you a fan of rugby?
I would say I do not really follow it. I have watched some games over the years. Incredibly brutal sport, man. You've got to be a tough dude to play that sport.
Tough would be one word. Maybe brain dead. You know, that might be another one. I agree.
It's a tough sport.
Yeah, it is. And finally, we found out you're a Marvel fan. Are you watching Better Call Saul?
I have not watched that. I have not watched it. Is it good?
Did you watch Breaking Bad?
I did not.
Okay.
I never did.
Yeah, so Better Call Saul is the prequel to Breaking Bad. So if you didn't see Breaking, you probably should watch Breaking Bad you could watch Better Call Saul first, because like I said, it's the prequel. But, you know, sure, it's based on the premise of everything that went on in Breaking Bad. So, you know, when you have just, you know, I don't know, Peter, 35, 40, 45 hours of free time, you know, crush out a Better Call Saul or Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, and then you'll be all up to speed.
Yeah, I could do that probably really, really late at night.
It would affect your 5 a.m. swims, though. I know that might be an issue.
No, actually, I swam this afternoon today, so that was good. But I worked out this morning.
Early, okay. Okay. Early. There it is. Yeah. There it is. We know. Never slacking, Peter. We're aware. We're very much aware.
No.
Peter, thanks so much for the time. Congrats on the big win. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you soon.
Hey, listen, appreciate it. And it's great that we got on the radio here, you know, 2 days after we won. So that was much better than after a loss. So I appreciate that.
Well, we were going to be reaching out. I agree. It's always better after a win. But listen, we were calling one way or the other. So it's certainly okay, great to have you.
All I'll say is, if it was calculated, thank you. If it happened by chance, it's good that once in a while something goes your way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No doubt. Best of luck with Portland, Peter. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, wrapping up hour number one, we're going to play Stump the Chumps coming up next. Peter Yates-Enick, Todd Lebo joining us in our next hour. We'll get to the bottom of some things at that point.
Still laughing at Peter from East. Hey, if it was luck, it's great that we had some good luck.
Thanking us for the timing, like, we got to win, and then you have me on. Because he never says no, yeah, right? Like, yeah, you know, for the most part, I mean, yeah, there have been probably some time where he was traveling. But for the most part, when we reach out, he's like, yeah, I can. He's like, well, the timing worked good. You know, got a W, yep, you know, unbeaten in 4 straight matches.
It's also clear to me, and you wouldn't say this, but I will, the respect he has for you of being a reporter. I think that the two of you have a great simpatico. And I think the interviews that you do with him are among the best that there is.
Oh, you're too kind, Curtis. You're too kind. Too bad I'm going to have to dump on you in the next hour. I hate doing that after you say such nice things.
It didn't work. I take it back. You're terrible.
Great Cajun food from Jazz can be yours if you can provide us a final Chumps question. Stump the Chumps, brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana Kitchen's next.
Among Royals who qualified for the batting title, who had the lowest single-season batting average? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana Kitchen.